I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer.
And hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a show where we get people from, well, I almost started as the intro for the Phileas Club, where we get people from around the world, but really, on Pixels, which is a gaming show, on this episode, we do get people from around the world. That cute little boyish laughter you heard was that of James, who's joining us from the UK. How's it going, James?
It's going good. I just finished moving house, so I'm a little bit stressed. But apart from that, it's going pretty well, actually. Thank you.
So my understanding is that you are now a professional YouTuber and online personality.
Yes, that's the goal.
That's your career choice.
Yes.
What are you doing, sir? You're crazy.
I know. It's a decision I could have made. What I'm trying to say, it's a scary decision.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We discussed it when we were together at Nerdtacular a few months ago. And my take on it is basically, if you don't start doing crazy stuff like that, after you're done with your studies and you've been good and, you know, you have your diploma in your pocket, and if you don't do that kind of crazy thing in your 20s, when are you going to do it?
Exactly. So,
better do it now, and this is my message to the youth around the world. Be an idiot now, because you won't be able to afford, probably, to be an idiot later. And it's character building, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, your parents are going to call me one day and say, what the hell did you do to our son?
Exactly, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, how's it been going for the first, like, what? It's been a couple of weeks?
Well, I left my job on Friday, so this is the first week, actually, that I've been technically...
Oh, I didn't realize, because you've been streaming and stuff for a while now, so...
Yeah, but no, this is the first week that's been 100% focus. It's been difficult to get into a routine, actually. I've started, like, getting dressed as if I'm going to work.
Yeah. You know,
so, like, I'm actually dressed for work right now, because then I'm in the mindset.
Yeah.
But it's still, like... Because I could just go downstairs and watch TV. It's difficult to keep myself doing the work.
Yeah.
But I'll get there.
Yeah, I can understand that for sure. I think as a, you know, professional podcaster myself, it's very easy to get distracted. But on the other hand, you know, you can always make a work session out of it. I don't think you should aim to work like 8 full hours a day. Because when you're on, you know, when you're doing the shows and doing the streaming and everything, it's usually a little bit more taxing than just, you know, watching emails on the screen. You have to be like entertaining and stuff. And it's, yeah, it's not, it's taxing physically.
Absolutely.
It's not like you're, you know, in the street in the cold and everything, obviously, but yeah. So, but at least you're doing, you know, something that you is an actual hobby. So when you're relaxing, go to your TV and play some more Metal Gear Solid. So that's also an option.
Yes.
And we also have very quiet, very silent in the background, Umberto, who's joining us from Korea.
Yeah. Hi, Patrick. Hi, James. And talking about stress and moving home, I moved to Korea when it was like 3 months ago, and I will stay here for other 6 months. So I didn't have your problems about getting accustomed from office to homework, because actually this is my 8 years working from home. So I already have the good routine of wake up and try to work as much as possible from my home, but I understand your difficulties. But yeah, now from Korea,
so,
since June.
Yeah, what's happening? We can hear some music in the background. I imagine some night bar and, you know, you're like, there's some colonial type furniture and...
I'm really sorry about the music in the background. What's happening? Just need some change, and I had the opportunity to come here for a few months, and it's a pretty cool country because it's very new in pretty much every aspect. Also, even though they have a very old culture, it's a very new country. It was remade, of course, after the war and the last 20 years. So everything is new. Super good internet and. Many young people, so it's a very crazy but interesting experience, so not bad.
Yeah, crazy fast internet, that's the reason we move countries nowadays. Yeah, having lived in Japan for a few years myself, I can completely understand the kind of change, you know. It's really a change of complete change of environment. It's really interesting. But come on, tell me the truth, Umberto, there's a girl involved in that move, isn't there?
As always.
All right, so you're still doing the same job that you were doing?
Yeah, exactly the same job. Just start working at like 3 p.m and I pretty much close my PC at 1 a.m because of course I need to work with the Italian time. And that's the hard part, but because as I told you before, it's basically 8 years. I never went to our office because our office is in Terni, which is 1 hour from Rome. But living in Milan, I never moved there. So it's basically the same job, just much more far. But in terms of daily routine, is still the same thing.
Yeah, just across, you know, the world, it's fine.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love this. You know, I was in Finland for the whole month of June, and I could just do it as if I was in Paris. And I love the fact that we can work from anywhere. And that mm-hmm. goes for you too, James, now that you're a podcaster. Just take your if you have a powerful enough laptop, just you can stream from anywhere. So,
yeah,
that's cool. All right, you know what? Let's start talking about video games instead of those crazy international moving stories. And we have to talk about Metal Gear Solid 5, I guess. We're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff. I played Mad Max. I played the Street Fighter 5 beta. There's news about Deus Ex, which is having a super weird pre-order campaign. There's the Vive VR that's been delayed a week ago. There's the Apple TV that is apparently coming out. You know, there's a new model, and there's going to be an emphasis on games. But the first thing I want to talk about is Metal Gear Solid 5, because it's been a while since I had this fantasy in my head that Metal Gear Solid 5 was going to make me a friend of the series again. And playing the intro... not the Phantom Pain, Ground Zeroes, I got a little bit scared. And then people were saying that the final game, the Phantom Pain, was a masterpiece. And then I got hopeful. And I finally played it. I bought it, and I'm about, I don't know, 7 to maybe 7 hours in. And I'm not convinced. I'm very sorry, and I feel like... Whenever I say I don't like Metal Gear Solid, I'm committing some kind of cardinal sin, and you know, the wrath of the followers of Kojima rains down upon me. But I've been saying this about the previous games that I hadn't played for a long time because they didn't gel with me. But this one, you know, it's the final one. It's being hailed as a success, as a masterpiece and everything. And still, I can't really get into it for some reason. It's very strange. It's like the infiltration parts are super well done, obviously, but everything that's around it just doesn't work with me. The intro is good. It puts you in the mood, and you're on this, I don't want to spoil it, but it's very a very powerful kind of immersion thing where you're into the skin of Snake. But then you have all of the silliness that revolves around it. That is, you know, all of the I would say even subpar, it's not subpar acting, but the writing feels translated from Japanese. And maybe it's because I know the Japanese culture so well that I can see the strings connecting the English version to the Japanese intent. And it doesn't quite work with me. There's the you know, childish adolescent humor that doesn't quite work with me. There's the, you know, Snake has a piece of metal embedded in the skull, which is, you know, and he's called Punished Venom Snake. And yep. All of the characters have these, you know, animal name, and the soldiers that you can recruit for your base have randomized animal and adjective name. And it's just, I don't know. It's what do you think, James? I think you've liked the game, so we can have a little bit of a balance here.
So my question is, do you like anime hugely? Are you an anime fan?
That's a good question, actually. I used to be, back when I was unconditionally in love with Japan. And then I moved there, and I saw, you know, behind the curtain, I guess. And anime is not my thing anymore. Some of it I like, but not unconditionally as I did before.
Okay. I think that, so how I have been approaching, so this is my first, I played Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, which I loved. Then I played Ground Zeroes and this one. I haven't played any of the others, but I have watched them, like people play through them. I think that for Metal Gear Solid, you need to realize, or at least for me, it helps realizing that it's totally taking itself not seriously. And that if you think about it, like it's Kojima is writing an anime and he's being super over the top and having fun with it and being silly. That's what makes it not silly for me. You know, it's kind of just like, it makes it silly, but I can accept it because it's the game understands that it's not being super serious, but that it's taking itself as a joke. And I can see why that might not jive with, like, because it's a super serious topic. I mean, it's talking about language and talking about how, and death and revenge. And there's definitely some serious topics there, but.
And even the setting, which is the Afghan War in the 80s, it's very present in that setting. It's not like, oh, it's someplace in the Middle East. It's like, absolutely. This is the Afghan War, super, and you have the USSR soldiers, they're here, and you're killed. Interestingly, you don't see any Mujahideen at all.
But you do later on. Okay. One of them, I actually just did a mission yesterday where I had to rescue one.
Okay, yeah, but yeah, all right.
Yeah, no, it's, I think the actual gameplay is stellar. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm really loving stealthing through places and just trying hundreds of different ways to complete a mission. But it does take itself, it does feel like it's been translated from Japanese kind of haphazardly, and I can see why, because the people like Metal Gear Solid because it's so over the top and ridiculous. But I can definitely see why that would be a problem, because it's not, it is over the top. And if you don't like that style of stuff, then it won't.
I guess, the translation isn't bad in the sense that it's funny English, right? But it there is something culturally that doesn't quite fit between the way it's written and the way we understand it. And you're right, it's very, there's this clash of super serious, realistic elements and this ridiculous, and I think for me that's where the disconnect happens. Umberto, are you a Metal Gear fan? I can't remember. I'm sure we talked about it, but
I am. I played all the major episodes. I didn't play the PSP games, but still, I really like Metal Gear Solid. Honestly, I like the not too serious kind of tone of the games. Still, I think there is a problem in terms of how the story is. How to say? I mean, if you play each game, it's okay. It's really interesting. At the same time, when you finish a game, you just stop and try to think, try to put everything together, you see there are some problems in terms of storytelling and not everything go to the right place. It's not, the story is not so clear at the end, but still I think it's a very, very interesting kind of series. I really like Metal Gear Solid, yes.
So have you played the fifth one or not yet?
I didn't play it yet. I just played Ground Zeroes because I didn't have the opportunity to review the game because, of course, I was not in Italy and I still didn't and still I didn't bought the game.
Okay. So I guess, you know, it needs to be said that the gameplay elements are great. And I think also the fact that I'm not a huge fan of all stealth gameplay, although you can stop and shoot, the soldiers that.
Yeah,
that,
and you can.
But the thing is, you can do it, but it feels to me like I'm betraying the intent, like I'm not playing it the way it's supposed to. So if I'm going to play a Metal Gear Solid game, I'm going to play it stealth, right? I'm not going to go in guns blazing and shoot everyone. It doesn't make sense. So, yeah, but I enjoy some peppering of it and, you know, going around and scoping everything for half an hour because before you finally go into the camp and decide your strategy. I understand it. I just don't enjoy it, I think, as much as I would like to. So if that core gameplay element doesn't work for me, I guess it's no surprise that everything else, which I don't even, you know, doesn't work for me as much as it does for other people, it's no surprise that I don't enjoy the game as much as I would like to.
Yeah. I do want to say that you can, you know, there's the code name rankings at the end of every mission. You can get an S rank if you go through guns blazing. Like it's possible to be as successful as possible, but I understand like Solid Snake Naked Snake in this one is a infiltrator, so you want to do it.
Yeah, if I want to play a game where I'm going to, maybe I should just, you know, accept that I'm going to shoot some people at least and just play like that. And maybe I would enjoy it a little bit more. I'm going to try a little bit more, I guess. But I just think it's not for me. And it's interesting that, you know, with this game, I get the most, religious hate that I do with, you know, that than I do with anything else. It's like the Kojima fans are very angry when you don't like one of their games. It's interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of history behind Metal Gear Solid, especially with what's been going on with Konami this year. And I think those fans, I don't think they're hateful. They're just very defensive.
I'm overstating it a little bit. It's very defensive. But, you know, there's one other thing I want to say about Metal Gear Solid 5 and Kojima in general. First of all, there was a video, a farewell video that he did with a sort of history of all of his games, all of his Metal Gear Solid games, and he was saying what he wanted to. And even now, you know, 20 years after Metal Gear Solid 1, and without having liked any of the following games, it still touched me in a very emotional way. I was like, oh, but it's Kojima. So I get it a little bit. On the other hand, the diva nature of the, you know, that character that he created for himself, with every mission you get an intro credit and ending credits, and in each of those credit sequences you have like his name five times in the credits, and it's like directed by Hideo Kojima, written by Hideo Kojima, a game by Hideo Kojima, and you're like, maybe he was poking, you know, fun at everyone because it's, you know, second degree and everything. He feels like a diva a little bit. And it's not to say that he's not talented. Some people have been telling me like, oh, but he's a genius and that's why he can plaster his name everywhere. It's like, obviously, usually divas are talented or at least recognized for what they do. It's what happens once they are recognized and acclaimed that makes them a diva or not. And it feels to me like he's not an obnoxious diva, but he's a little bit of a, I don't know, I have a problem with divas. So I like humbleness more than people who plaster their name 150 times across their games. Maybe it's because he was taken off the you know, jacket. But anyway, I just wanted to mention this. And I still like Kojima. He's fine. I just, you know, whatever. He'll be back. He will come out with another game very soon with another studio that's going to pay him very well to make the game.
I sincerely hope so. I mean, even I've been enjoying... The fun I've had with Metal Gear Solid 5 is going to make me go back and play the others, and I think that someone with that I mean, the impact that he's made on gaming just in general, I sincerely hope he gets to make another game.
Yeah, if nothing else, he invented stealth gameplay. Well, some purists are going to say that, you know, there were things before, but he's basically the one that made it what it is today. So,
and cinematic storytelling as well. I mean, Metal Gear Solid 1 was huge in the fact it had voice acting, like proper cinematic voice acting and proper cutscenes on a PS1 game.
Yeah, for sure. He brought this to gaming. He was a precursor in that sense, for sure.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
I think cinematic storytelling would have made its way to consoles anyway. But he was for sure, like, the first time I played Metal Gear Solid, my head exploded. You probably weren't even born, James. That's depressing.
I would have been four when it came out.
Oh, okay, that's fine then. All right, let's talk about another cinematic achievement that translated into gameplay, and that's Mad Max, which I hesitated getting. And we're not going to be as long on Mad Max as we are on Metal Gear Solid, but it was like 15 euros or 16 euros on Green Man Gaming or CD Keys. Yeah, and so it's not been reviewing super well, but I figured I loved the movie Fury Road so much that I needed to be all shiny and chrome in the game too. And so I went and bought it. I figured I'm going to play it for a couple of hours at least, but I want to try it. And I knew it has almost nothing to do with the movie except a couple of names here and there. And so I played it for a couple of hours. And I guess the bar was, it had been reviewing, you know, mediocrely. It usually is considered relatively, it's not a horrible game, but it's competent but not exciting. And I guess the bar was, am I going to be happy playing it more than a couple of hours? Am I going to get 10 hours of gameplay out of it? And I'm afraid that the answer is probably not. It's well done. It's a good academic, I don't know if you say that in English, but academically it's good. Like, you can grade it and it ticks all the boxes. It's you have stuff to do. It's an open world and you have places to go and there's a list of things to actually do. It's full of things to do, but there's never anything you actually want to do. There's never any cool moment. The combat system, the combat system is competent, but not exciting. The car chases are well done, but not fun. I'm afraid it is what we feared it was going to be, and not what I hoped it was going to be, which was some kind of Shadow of Mordor surprise. And Shadow of Mordor it's funny because on paper, it doesn't have a lot more than Mad Max. It has that, you know, the Army of Mordor system, which was, you know, new and different, and that made it fun. But aside from that, the gameplay, the day-to-day, every-minute gameplay wasn't super... It shouldn't have been a lot more exciting. But in practice, for some reason, some, you know, arcane game design reason that I'm not seeing, it's better. It's just more fun to play. And the fun is just not there in Mad Max. So,
yeah I played...
Go ahead, Umberto.
Okay. Yeah, I played the preview version. Sorry, but it was pretty much the same thing as the final one. And I agree with you. I think two things didn't pay. The first one is that Avalanche developed the game at the same time of Just Cause. So you can see that, as you said, it's not a bad game, but maybe it doesn't have small details or the kind of ideas that maybe they could have made if they only focused on this game. But of course, Just Cause is another super huge and super also ambitious game. So maybe it wasn't a super good idea to develop the two games at the same time. And the other thing is that you say that you really like the movie, and I think this is another problem, because the movie was so good and so intense, but it was just a 2 hours kind of experience. So I also kind of took the game trying to imagine how could have been play the movie. But of course, you can't put the same kind of experience in an open world game like this. So I agree with you. It's a good game, but still not not the best one, and probably from Avalanche, I expected something more.
Yeah, I guess the conclusion of this is that I don't even think it's worth the €16 or $18 or whatever.
That, probably not.
Yeah, it's just on that cusp, right? It's just on the cusp of if there had been you know half the things to do, but they had been more polished to be made fun. It would have been maybe a 5-hour fun experience, or you know, 10 hours fun experience that would have been worth $20. But here, it's just probably a 20 hours experience that is just not fun. You can do it if you want to, but it hurts me to say this. It's really painful to say that it's not worth that money. But
yeah. Do you think it would work better if it was linear?
No, I don't even think so. It is relatively linear. You can follow the story missions, but it's just it's not a problem. You know, the open world nature is not even the problem. The problem is that the core gameplay elements, like the fighting, is the tamest version of the Batman, you know, fighting you can find. It's okay. It's just not. It doesn't feel the impact of your fight doesn't feel as good. It feels okay. It doesn't feel great like it does in Batman or in Shadow of Mordor or some of these other games.
Okay.
So anyway, it doesn't. It's too bad. I'm sad. Maybe I'm going to play it a little bit more, but even that, I doubt it. And the characters are not. There is no charisma. Like your companion Chum Bucket is weird, and you can see that it's been written with care, but it just doesn't. It's I don't understand why you have this weird hunchback, and there are some elements that are not bad. Like he speaks about motors and mechanic things in this enlightened religious way, which works on the writing level. It works on the, but it just doesn't. I don't know. It doesn't gel again. And I think for and unlike Metal Gear Solid 5, it's not just for me. So,
yeah.
Huh. Anyway, Street Fighter 5 beta. We've played the beta, or at least I have. Have either of you guys played it?
No.
I didn't play the beta in the last few days, but I played the preview version during the last couple of press events. I mean, at the E3 and at the Gamescom.
Okay, so what did you think of Street Fighter V? And let us know if you were a fan of Street Fighter IV before that. What are your impressions?
I was a fan, and I think it's how to say that's a little hard. When Street Fighter IV came out, it was a really long time that I didn't play in a Street Fighter game, so it was really like something new. Also, even though it was something that, of course, it was still taking many things from other Street Fighters games, but it look and play new. This Street Fighter V, I think it's really solid fighting games. It has some new good mechanics, and I'm not a pro, so I can't get into too many details. Like this one will be a good mechanic, this one will not. But I think it's really solid and good. But at the same time, I didn't have the same wow kind of effect that I had when the Street Fighter IV came out.
You know, that's interesting because for me, it's kind of the... So I understand that graphically, it's not as impressive, obviously, as Street Fighter IV when it first came out because, you know, 4 came out almost 10 years ago, I think. And it was It was the first full 3D... Well, not the first, but we're not going to talk about Street Fighter... what was the name of the first 3D one? Which was great, by the way. It was all blocky and... Anyway... was it? No, not X. It was... I have to look for it now. 3D Street Fighter. The first one was by Arika, another company that was... Oh, yes, you're right. EX. Thank you. Thank you, Humberto. It was great. Anyway, Street Fighter 4 was visually interesting. Street Fighter 5 is much better looking, but as with other... game every other game that makes the transition from PS 3 or Xbox 360 to PS4 and Xbox One, initially it feels like, oh, that's not such a big deal, and then you go back and look at the previous one and you're like, oh, all right, yes, actually it does look better. But aside from that, I think gameplay-wise, it's been refined to a point where I think a lot of people who are interested in Street Fighter 4 but just couldn't get into it because it was too technical and too difficult are going to be pleased by Street Fighter 5. There's a lot of elements that are that make the game, it feels like they've gone full hog into the philosophy or of easy to learn and hard to master, which other companies are have, you know, implemented to great success. And for this one, it feels like Street Fighter V is very geared towards not beginners, but people who are interested in those games, but aren't technical enough for the, you know, one frame hit that you have to press the button at the exact right time. There are things like, you know, the V skill, which is a very easy, basically, special move that you press the two medium buttons and it executes. For example, the one from Cammy is she does a spinning punch, and as she's spinning, she goes she can avoid fireballs. So if you can press the buttons at the right time, you go through a fireball and hit your enemy. And it also spins, and if you go too far, it spins and hits the enemy on the right spot. But it's also, once you're engaged in that animation, it takes a little bit of time to complete. And in order to go through the fireball, you have to anticipate the enemy actually doing the fireball. You have to really feel when they're going to do one. It's really difficult to initiate the hit, the move as you're seeing the guy doing it. So you still have to read into the fight and understand how the flow of the fight is going. You can't just press it willy-nilly and just get something out of it. So it feels like you still have to have some kind of understanding of the fight, but it's the emphasis is not on being super quick on your twitch reflexes and you have to press in half a second at the right time, or well, actually half a second probably, but a tenth of a second. And there are things like the moves that you do, you don't have like a forward heavy punch or forward heavy kick. When you press heavy kick, 99% of the time it's always going to be the same one. So all of these kinds of things make it more approachable. And I think that it's going to be very interesting to widen the potential player base in that. So the big question when you do that is, do you manage to do it while keeping the technicality high enough that it's just not going to be just a free-for-all and anyone is going to be able to do anything? And I think from what I've seen, it's a, you know, very early beta. I've played a few hours of the game, but it feels like it's still highly technical, but more approachable. So I think they're striking the right balance there. I'm very positively, my impressions are very positive at this point.
So at the risk of sounding, I guess, reductive, do you think this could be, I guess, the Heroes of the Storm to Metal Gear, to Mortal Kombat's Dota 2?
Well, so first of all, I wouldn't call Mortal Kombat Dota 2.
No, I couldn't think of a...
Yeah. Maybe Street Fighter 4, even.
Okay,
or
yeah.
Or even, you know, games like Guilty Gear and these kinds of games. Yes, sure. I think that's a very apt description. It's the Hearthstone to a little bit less approachable, but we'll see what other characters are going to be announced. But It is that kind of thing. It is the they're trying to bring, as Blizzard does very well, a genre of games that is very popular but relatively niche, and trying to widen the appeal of the game while keeping it very technical and very competitive if you want to go that route. They're not widening the base to the extent that Blizzard did with Hearthstone, which means really anyone can come and play it, because in a fighting game, you still have these things where you have to actually put the, you know, input the moves, and it's a little bit more difficult than dragging a card onto the game. But maybe the Heroes of the Storm comparison is apt. I think that might be it.
Okay, cool.
And we might see some, you know, daily quests and things to get the in-game currency to buy more characters, and so that kind of mechanic also gels with the with that kind of game. Sorry, Umberto.
Oh, sorry. I was just trying to say that it's a little bit the novel bug of the fighting games to make like more accessible experiences, because they also announced the Rising Thunder. I don't know if you played a little bit. it's another fighting game from Seth Killian, which worked actually at Capcom and on Street Fighter, and it is maybe also more accessible than a Street Fighter V, because they are trying to just really simplify also the execution of special moves. But the idea is basically, again, just to get this genre more accessible to other people. So it's maybe I think we will see some more fighting games on this kind of idea in the next few years.
Yeah, I was excited about Rising Thunder. I tried to install it. I got into the beta, was it? And I couldn't manage to install it on my PC. I got like three different kinds of errors and it wouldn't install. So, I'll try again at some point. I think Rising Thunder, basically you don't have any joystick moves to do the special moves. It's just one direction and one button.
Oh.
Yeah. So
that sounds interesting to me, because my problem with fighting games is I can never remember like half the game. I'm checking the move list. I just can't think about what my combinations are, which is why I like Super Smash Brothers. And if Rising Thunder does that same kind of thing, where you just have four or five moves based on where you're moving your button you're pressing, that sounds perfect to me.
Well,
I'm checking
this
out right now.
Yeah, well, go ahead. I think you can get into the beta relatively easily. But I think, I don't know if it's going to work, but there is we're at the right time for fighting games to come back as a maybe a little bit more popular of a genre. We're going to talk about racing games a little bit later, and I think that is possibly in the bottom of the curve right now. And I think fighting games are possibly coming back to a higher portion of their own curves. Before we move on from Street Fighter, I just wanted to mention our Mika, Rainbow Mika, was announced as it was the latest character announced. And she looks super fun. She's a character that came from Street Fighter Alpha, and she's a basically female luchador, and she's a wrestler. She looks really fun to play. But but is a word I chose very carefully. she is basically dressed in a string of in a thread. She has she does attacks with her butts. Her tits are hanging out, and between that, you know, I don't think I would have even mentioned it if we hadn't seen in the same period of time the release of the pre-order special costumes for all of the characters. And some of them are super cool, but in the end, we now have five female characters or costumes, and basically four of them are in swimsuits. It's Chun-Li is her main costume is I think fine. It's a Chinese dress, but her alternate costume is basically a swimsuit. Cammy is in an actual swimsuit, her default costume, and her alternate costume is another swimsuit. I would have hoped they would have taken the opportunity to make her an actual, I don't know, combat dress.
Yeah.
And
that's
and
the
Armika
one that stands out most
is,
to me, actually. Cammy's one. Yeah, because I mean the other ones I could see, because they're alternate costumes, I could see it being like, you know, if you want them, you can get them. But the fact that Cammy's, she's a soldier, and it's a swimsuit as her default costume, that one stands out to me as most egregious.
And I think, you know, it's all about balance. There are some people who told me, oh, but Blanka is usually he's half naked, and Blanka hasn't been announced for the game yet, but Nikali is another character. He's basically naked. It's fine to have some naked characters, you know, and especially in a fighting game, actual fighters are usually not wearing a lot of clothes. And by the way, Ryu's alternate costume is bearded Ryu, and he's really hot. Like, he's
sexy Ryu.
Sexy Ryu, yeah. I'm like, ooh, you're making me reconsider my life choices. but you know, so that's fine. It's just that all of the female characters, or, you know, 80% of them in this at this stage of the game, are basically in swimsuits. It bothers me. And couple that with the, I don't know if you've seen that video from Metal Gear Solid 5 that's made the rounds, which is Quiet, which is a sniper in the game, who's already, she's like, again, in a literal swimsuit. She is in a swimsuit in the game. And I know it's justified in the game. Yeah. She's like, oh, I don't want to wear clothes because of this and that. But it's like, and then it starts raining and she goes and you know, she goes and dances in the rain in what is, it's so ridiculous. She's like, her boobs are jiggling and she's like, it's so adolescent. And I think the thing is, not to get this into a giant, you know, conversation about female representation in gaming, mm-hmm. which I could get into, but it has to do a lot more with Japan. And the way Japanese people, you know, Japanese society considers women. And if you know anything about Japan, and most of, you know, a lot of people are anime fans and video games fans, and you know that the Japanese versions of games are usually the ones that have the most issues with gender equality. And Japan has a long way to go to consider women, you know, equal to basically... I've lived there, I've studied it, they have a big problem with that. And this is just an example of that, and I know it, and it's just, it bothers me. I know that's the way it is, and things will need to change a lot before we see the effect in games. It's probably a symptom of all of this. But it's still okay to mention it and to
absolutely
point it out, which is what I'm doing here. So,
I do think, I mean, Metal Gear Solid, I do think handles it like the beginning of the game. You spend staring at a guy's butt through a thing. So I do think at least Metal Gear Solid is sorta equal opportunity in its objectification to a degree.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that what you're looking at. The guy's butt, which is through a hospital gown, for a little bit. I wouldn't quite say it's equal to what we see in Quiet, which is a very objectified character, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I see where you're coming from. I think, again, you can point to examples, and that's an important thing to understand. I think you can point to examples where male characters are objectified to a degree as well. But the problem is a large majority, especially in Japanese games, a majority of the female characters are objectified. It's okay to have some objectified characters of either gender, I think. But the problem arises when there's this imbalance where, you know, 80 or 90% of the female characters are objectified and only, I don't know, 30 or 20 or 40, whatever percent of the male characters feel like sexual mm-hmm. objects, right?
So, absolutely, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Anyway, any thoughts on that, Umberto? You're in Korea. I know they're, as much as they like to hate on each other, the Japanese and Koreans are very close to in many respects.
The Confucian roots are the same, so they have the same kind of problems, if you want to say so. I don't know. I think still those are just video games. So I mean it's okay. It's okay. Those are just choices. So if you aim to some kind of to a certain kind of players, I mean it's still okay. I mean I understand what you mean, but at the same time, I don't know. It's a little hard to explain. I don't think it's too bad in video game because you just choose to talk to half of your possible players. So this is more like. To me, it's more a business choice, kind of marketing business kind of choice. So if they want all the Street Fighter women fighter in a swimsuit, to me, I mean, it's okay. They should know that probably some girls will be angry, some girls will not play the game. It's not a too big deal, because one day will come out another fighting game where women are better represented and women will play this game. And so, I don't know, this is not the kind of topic of that really turned me on.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, maybe it turns you on. It doesn't bother you.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I would agree if there were games where, if there were enough games or, you know, that had female characters represented well. And that's the whole issue, I think, you know, the balance thing. And the big problem is I think we don't have enough of those. It's changing in the West very quickly in the past couple of mm-hmm. years. We've had a lot of progress in that area. But in the East, I think it's still, and that's what we're coming back to, I guess, in the end. It's the Japanese games are well, Japanese.
Yeah.
And that's the balance. You know, it's that balance. We don't have fighting games with well-dressed female characters, or very few. But anyway, that could make for an entire show. If you want to discuss this more, I've written a big, very long series of articles on my blog, patrickbeja.com, discussing the issue of female representation in gaming and in society at large, which I think is a problem. And I've discussed ethics in games journalism as well, the two issues mm-hmm. because of Gamergate have been linked very often, and I've discussed Gamergate as well. And I wrote it a year ago, and I reread it recently. I think as we're heading into the first anniversary of Gamergate, the description of trying to understand why Gamergate is so controversial and such a big issue, I think the way I explore it is still relevant today. So if you want to find out more about that, it's on patrickbeja.com. It's not too far down the articles. And talking about game journalism and ethics, the FTC has found a YouTube network, Machinima, I believe, guilty of deceptive Xbox One advertising. We discussed it a little bit earlier in the previous episode, and I think I've managed to put my feelings about this into words. I think ethics is supremely important. When you're talking about journalism, I think it's been bandied about as an issue in instances where I think today we're in a very good place for most major publications. There's ethics statements that are very clear, and the publications say when they get things for free nowadays. The YouTube space is still very uncertain. And the attention of the people who want ethics in games journalism, I think, would be well served to be turned on those types of activities, because it's a lot of young people who really don't know how things work and what should be done and what shouldn't be done. And a lot of them have been learning about all of this as they go. The bottom line is, be it for serious journalists or for YouTubers, I think the key thing is that if you're saying anything that could influence your viewers or readers or listeners' opinion, you mm-hmm. should be clear about why you're saying these things. Absolutely. If it is because you are actually liking or disliking something, then people should understand it. Of course, maybe you don't have to write it in full letters in, you know, giant font everywhere, but people should have a reasonable expectation of understanding what you're saying it. And if you're getting paid for it, then people should at least have a reasonable understanding of that. At least, you know, a message like made possible with, or, you know, in partnership with, or whatever, something like that. And it's a simple rule, right? Get people to have a reasonable understanding of the origin of your, you know, review, talking about the game, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should if you pay me to say something, I should let someone know that I've been paid to say it. I think
a lot of YouTubers have been saying, well, we're entertainers, so we're not really journalists. And I think that's the thing that bothers me the most. As long as you have people who are listening to your opinion and who are going to make a purchasing decision based on it, then you should apply the same ethical rules to yourself as journalists do. It doesn't matter that you call yourself an entertainer or, you know, a fun giver or whatever. I think it's important that once the purchasing decision is going to be influenced, then...
Yes. Yeah, exactly. If you're an influencer, then you're...
Exactly.
Then you have a
ethical duty.
Yeah, that's the word, duty. You have a duty to because you're misleading people otherwise, yeah. and that's not cool.
And you know, even stronger than not cool, it's not legal, right?
No,
it's for journalists. It's at least it's not legal, and that's the big question: are these people journalists? Are they subjected to the same rules as journalists are?
Well,
and yeah,
I know that the FTC. At least, I don't know what it's like in the EU, but I know the FTC this year, I think it was in May or March, I don't remember which, implemented a law that said whenever you're advertising something, you have to disclose it or it's illegal. So no matter who does it.
And I think it's somewhat different. Some people sometimes say, you know, well, when an athlete gets paid to use, or an actor gets paid to use a BlackBerry or whatever, you know, this or that watch, to wear this or that watch. I think it's not the same because, first of all, they're not expected to be reviewing anything or giving their opinion on something. When you're playing something and having fun with it, you're kind of, you know, saying that the game is fun. And if the fun is being paid for, then it's a different story. If the person is just showing up to a premiere of a movie with a certain watch, then I don't think it's quite the same. Yes, it's paid for and it's some kind of advertising, but it's not the same level. He's not telling you, buy this watch, it's super cool. And if they are, I think in that case, it becomes very iffy, right?
Exactly.
It's that, yeah. So anyway, Umberto, any thoughts on this? Or
I mean, as you say, it is or it should be a very simple kind of rule, but I don't know. I don't want to say too much because, of course, we have many people watching, YouTubers that say to us, you old journalists still working for online magazine, you take money for this, and so if I say anything, it sounds like, this time we can say bad things about YouTubers, which yeah, I really don't want to do.
I understand. Yeah, I think the situation has been getting a lot better. I think for both YouTubers, I mean, a couple of years ago, the practices, I can tell you, were horrendous. Like, it was appalling what was happening. And for the press as well, there's been, if anything, the issues, the focus that has been put on ethics in games journalism in the past year, I think has... encouraged people to actually make their ethical policies a little bit clearer. So I don't think we have a big issue anymore, honestly. There might be incidents here and there, as they always are, and they're being scrutinized in an appropriate way. But even that FTC ruling that's happened last week is on facts that are almost a year old. So I think all of this is getting regulated, and it's good.
Yeah. I agree.
Deus Ex, Mankind Divided, the pre-order campaign is, I would say, even potentially bordering on deceptive practices.
Yeah, this makes me feel like slimy, this Deus Ex thing, because it feels like a pyramid scheme. It feels like a pyramid scheme.
So it's the way it's going to work is that depending on how many people order or pre-order Deus Ex, Mankind Divided, they're going to unlock different tiers of rewards. The first tier is going to be you can select certain augments that are going to be bonuses for you to play. The second tier, you can choose between a digital art book and a soundtrack sampler. Tier 3 is a comic book or a novel. And tier four is 4 days early access, and I think this is just for the people who pre-order, not for everyone. And it's angering me a little bit because of a couple of things. First of all, it feels, you're right, James, it feels a little bit slimy to get people. Basically, what this suggests is that people are going to be encouraging their friends to pre-order the game, which, as we've said many times, I don't think anyone should pre-order any game ever. Unless you're absolutely 120% certain that you're going to like it. For example, Street Fighter V. I'm going to play it. I'm going to pre-order it. It doesn't matter if it sucks, which my first impressions are it doesn't. I'm going to play it anyway. Fine. If you're, you know, that kind of zealot, then pre-order it. And some people will. But in general, it's probably a bad idea to pre-order a game 90% of the time because you're going to be able to get it on the day it's released anyway, no matter what. And here, it's encouraging their friends kind of to pre-order, but you know it's not going to happen. Is anyone going to go to their friends and say, oh, dude, you should pre-order Deus Ex now because if you do, then we all get some added tiers of bonuses. It feels wrong, and no one's going to do it. Plus, those tiers don't have any numbers attached to it. So it is absolute, I can guarantee you 200%. It's not even a question that they're going to reach tier 4 for a couple of reasons. First of all, if they don't, you know, if they stop at tier 2, PR-wise, the message is, oh, well, you know, we didn't sell enough pre-orders, so I guess we're not going to get to tier 3. And yeah, it's like, our game didn't generate enough interest. Sorry. It, of course, it's not going to happen. And second, Tier 4 is 4 days early access for the people who pre-ordered, which means it's going to make their servers heat up less once the game is actually released. It makes for an easier launch.
Yeah.
Everyone wins.
I mean, that PR message of how many people bought our game? Oh, enough to unlock 4 day early access. That's Tier 5. You know, that's a huge positive PR boom as well.
Yeah, exactly. Then they can pair it around and say, Tier 4 reached early access. Woohoo, the game is so successful. But you don't know how many people pre-ordered.
No.
So, yeah, don't I mean, I don't think the worst thing about this is I don't think anyone is fooled by this, right? We're not revealing some kind of huge scandal here. It's just riding on the coattails of some kind of crowdfunding. It was cooked up in the mind of some marketing executive that needed an original plan for the launch of the game and that no one could say no to. It feels like it was like, oh yeah, all right, yeah, maybe, yeah, let's do that. It's gonna sound like crowdfunding, it's gonna be cool, it's gonna, no, it's not. It got very bad reactions from all around, I think. So anyway,
it was a pretty stupid idea, probably.
All right, I think that's the summary of all of it. It was a pretty stupid idea.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I know that I've seen a Steam game do it before. I think there was like Enemy Within, the XCOM expansion.
It feels like,
it?
Yeah, something like that has been, but it wasn't quite this. There's something different about this one, but. Anyway, if you're a Deus Ex fan, apparently we're going to get a backwards compatibility on Xbox One with the original Deus Ex. So that could be fun for some people. And by the way, the backwards compatibility poll is still running on Xbox One. That's going to start in November. And the first one, I'll give you a guess. Which one do you think the first game the most voted for on backwards compatibility is?
Without looking, I want to say Halo, but
that, well,
oh, wow, okay, I look, yeah. Okay.
Call of Duty Black Ops 2, what the hell? It's like, okay, I know Call of Duty is, but backwards compatibility? Black Ops 2, really? That is weird. I mean, second, I can understand. Red Dead Redemption, fantastic game. Skyrim is third, works too. Call of Duty, if you're going to go for a Call of Duty, the fourth one is Modern Warfare 2, which is wonderful. Halo Reach comes afterwards. Black Ops, next. Gears of War 3, Fallout 3, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, etc., etc. But yeah, so most of those games are probably going to get backwards compatibility and probably going to get some kind of Xbox Live Gold inclusion, so that's good news. Bad news, or I don't know, neutral news, the Vive VR headset is going to be launched in 2016 after all. That means that all of the VR headsets are basically going to be launched in 2016. And VR, as I had been predicting, is not going to be actually a thing until, I would say, the end of 2016.
At least, and this one in particular, because I don't know if you guys played a little bit with it. I did at Gamescom.
No, I played with an Oculus, but not the Vive.
This is really, really interesting, and but at the same time, I think it will be pretty much impossible for 99% of people just to play with it in the proper way, because you need an empty room, even though it's small, still pretty much empty, and you really can move with the Vive VR. So you need space, and it's really cool. It's really different, but at the same time, I really can't imagine how hard it would be to just make games for this, proper games, and just I think very few people will be able to experience this VR set in a proper way.
Well, the problem is you have to put those pieces at the edge, you know, at the corners of your room, and it tracks your movement in the room. So you need a big room. And in the US, it's possibly possible in some cities. In Europe, it's going to be difficult because we have smaller rooms. And in Korea, dude, you're going to be in trouble if you stay there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really smart because it tells you when you are reaching the wall. But basically, that's it. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can't put a sofa in your room. You need an empty room. And I don't know, it's very, very cool. I played it with 5 or 6 demos. It was super, super cool, but already Oculus has the problem that it needs some good games made for Oculus to really shine. With this one, I think will be much harder, and I don't know, you also need good numbers to try to think proper games and good games. I don't know. It's an interesting technology, I think.
I think ultimately all three of them, which are the Oculus Rift, the Vive VR, well, the Valve model from Valve, and the Sony Morpheus, are going to be items that you use sitting down or standing, but I don't think many people are going to be using them walking around. Maybe turning around, but not walking around. And so ultimately, all three of them are going to be similarly used. I think the Morpheus is interesting because a lot of people already have PS4s, and the specs are set. With a PC, you're going to need a relatively powerful PC if you want to use these things. And PCs are more expensive than a PS4, and you also need, you know, the device itself. I suspect the Morpheus is going to be the cheapest of all of them, also the least technologically interesting, but possibly the cheapest. You're also going to have the PlayStation Move that you're going to use with it, so you're going to have to add that, which means you also need a PlayStation Eye. But ultimately, I still think it's going to be cheaper to get a PS4 set than a PC set. But, you know, we're going to see. I think the research into whether or not this is cool is going to start in 2016. Not, you know, when it first comes out, it's not going to be, some people are going to buy one of them, and I'm going to be one of those people for sure, but it's not going to be primed for consumer consumption immediately. It's going to be months before people figure out exactly how to use this thing and if it's actually a fun experience for games or other things. So yeah, if you're not super interested, if you're not a zealot, as I was saying, for pre-orders, you can safely wait until the end of the year, I think. Apple TV rumors. Apparently, games are going to be a huge focus on the next Apple TV that's going to be announced tomorrow. Apple TV 4, there's going to be an app ecosystem, possibly a controller sold with it. That seems weird because they were super expensive, but controllers, the iOS controllers that already exist are going to work with it. There's going to be the App Store Games Twitter account was created. So basically, Apple is getting into the set-top box, which is also a game console game and market. We know that the Ouya has made a huge flop, and I was not convinced at all by all of these attempts at converting mobile OSs into game systems on your TV. Is the Apple TV going to be different? Maybe Umberto, who's an expert in all things games and including mobile, I've just decreed.
It will be, of course, different from Ouya because it's Apple is much bigger than Ouya. I don't know. It will probably not be something. It will sure not be something for core gamers. But I mean, it can be successful in the way that many people already has games on the iPad and on the iPhone. So maybe they just want to play again or play a little more on their TV. I don't think it will be a revolution in gaming because it's still just one of those box to put under the TV, very small, and for streaming and that kind of stuff. I don't know. It's I'm not too convinced by this kind of stuff. But still, again, I think that if you play on your iPhone and on your tablet and want just to go back home and play a little bit more at your mobile games, it's good. But I don't know. I'm not too impressed. But I was reading your summary. You said that full Skylander Supercharged will come to iOS, and that's of course pretty cool. But I think in 5 years we will not have the Apple TV instead of our consoles and PC. I'm pretty sure about that.
I wonder if it's going to be like the Apple TV is supposed to be the Steam Link, you know, the Steam their answer mm-hmm. like the Mac OS.
Equivalent Steam. To... No, I don't think so, because the Steam Link is really just to stream your games from your PC to the TV. The Apple TV is going to be... The games are going to be running on the system, on the small set-top box. I think that looking at it as the people who play on mobile are going to be playing on their Apple TV, I don't even think that's the case, because as I often say... for me, the casual gamers that play on mobile are the people who play when they have time to waste. And the core gamers who play on their TV are people who make time specifically to play, right? And so I don't think that those people are going to translate too much. However, I think that, you know, graphics-wise and convenience-wise, the Apple TV could compete to an extent with some more expensive systems for people who don't want to buy a full-blown console, but their kids or maybe... Honestly, I'm not even convinced that many people... I'm trying to think of a situation of someone who would buy an Apple TV and play a game, but aside from maybe some children, I don't see who would. Anyone who wants to play a specific game is going to want a dedicated console mm-hmm. for it.
Yep.
The mobile market is very different because the people who want... The 3DS is still selling, mind you, but the people who play on the bus are people who play because they don't have anything better to do. It's the Candy Crush of the world. And when they are going to get home, they're going to sit in front of the TV and watch, you know, Survivor or some kind of reality TV thing. I would think maybe I'm going to be proven wrong, and I think that the graphical capabilities of the devices are high enough that you can offer some pretty compelling games. You know, maybe it's going to be a price thing. Maybe the games are going to be $5 when they are 20 on a PS4, and people are going to buy them there. And people who are actual gamers, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I think it has the potential to do something. I just don't know what that something is. Apple is not Ouya. It's not even those Android TV devices we've seen. Apple has an impact on these industries that others don't. So I think that a unified offering, a vibrant app store is going to have some kind of an effect. I just don't know what how strong the effect is going to be. Would you play games on your Apple TV, James?
Yeah, why not? If I had an Apple TV and I had games to play on it, then yes, I wouldn't buy one specifically for it.
I think that's the key. A lot of people are going to be buying Apple TVs just for many other things. No one's going to buy it to play games. But then when you see, I don't know, some mobile game that is translated to, you know, that's also on your PS4 or Xbox One and on your Apple TV for half the price, maybe you're going to whip out the Apple TV controller. Maybe, you know, I think that might be something. Maybe some games that are kind of fun but don't quite work on your iPhone or iPad, that don't, you know, that aren't adapted, aren't perfect for touch control, are going to be more fun to play for people who are actually gamers on the Apple TV because you're sitting down in your couch and watching your giant screen. Mm-hmm. That might be an area that, you know, maybe some games I don't really play on my iPhone because I don't bother with them. Maybe I would play them with a controller and, you know, a big TV. Ah, we'll see. More quick news. Lawbreakers was announced. It's the game from Cliff Bleszinski's new team coming out 2016. It's a free-to-play first-person shooter, competitive, no single-player campaign. Yeah, maybe. It looks Overwatch-ish, which is a good thing. Yeah, impressions? Anyone has anything to say about this game?
Not really. I mean, as you just picked up, the big thing that mattered to me is that it looks like an Overwatch game. It's by Cliff Bleszinski.
A little bit. Maybe a little more, a little faster and a little more, it still has a foot in the arena shooter kind of gameplay, but yeah, it has, of course, something of Overwatch. And it's fun because we played it, not me, one colleague was at PAX Prime, and he played it, but there is an NDA on the game that will last probably forever for that hands-on, so we will never write about the game. not about that hands-on.
It's well, you know, it looks fast. That's for sure. It looks faster than Overwatch, for example. But yeah, we'll see. I'm always interested in what Bleszinski does because, you know, Gears of War, we're talking about influential. Gears of War was so influential in the third-person shooter genre, and he's been at Epic for a long time, and his new endeavor is interesting, of course. And by the way, he wants to have an equal split between male and female characters, and the female character looked badass and not undressed. So, there, just wanted to throw that out there. FIFA 16 demo is available on the PS4, PS Store. I'm guessing on the Xbox One as well. I'm downloading it as we speak because you know what? It's the most played game in the history of games. I'm going to try it out. And there's a demo, so why not? I also played the demo of Dying Light and I was surprised. It was fun. I'm going to try and get it. For cheap. I was very surprised. You know, it's the opposite of the experience I've had with Mad Max, which was underwhelming. It was just ticking all the boxes, underwhelming. This one seems like it's ticking all the boxes and kind of fun. So
yeah, it's very rewarding doing the parkouring around. And you're getting into it. So I adore Dying Light. I think it's a fantastic game. It's one of the best games I've played, I think. I think that buying it now is a great thing to do because they're just about to release a huge expansion pack. And I mean huge, like doubling the content of the game.
So maybe, yeah. I think, you know, usually when these things happen, the base game drops in price. So maybe I'm going to be on the lookout for that, possibly. I enjoyed Dead Island 1. I got a good amount of fun out of that, and it's the same team. So, Forza 6 is getting great reviews. So, if you enjoy racing games, that might be interesting for you. I played the demo again on Xbox One, and so the game is coming out on the 18th. And I'm like, I was a little bit sad because it was one of those. It's sad pixels today. I was like, I remember a time with Gran Turismo 1, Gran Turismo 2, when I would just eat and drink and sleep racing games. And that was Gran Turismo, basically. It was my one racing game. Gran Turismo 6 has sold like a little bit over 2 million units, which is a ridiculous number compared to what it did before. The fifth one did 10 million units. So I think racing games have sort of gone out of the consumer market, as we were talking about this with the fighting games. I think racing games are still very exciting for racing game fans who are dedicated to that, but they're not quite wide-reaching as they were at a point in their life. And that's where I think on the opposite end, fighting games are, which they're primed to come back maybe to more players. But Forza 6 is just not for me. It looks super well done, but yeah, the realistic racer.
And this time it has many contents, not like Forza 5.
Not like the fifth one.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it looks like, you know, it's a very good racer. So Guild Wars 2 is going free to play. So if you've I think Guild Wars 2 is the MMO-ish game that I've enjoyed the most out of all the World of Warcraft clones. It sold 5 million copies. It's free to play now because the expansion is coming out, and basically they want you to buy the expansion. If you want to get into the game, you will only have to buy the expansion. It's coming out in October 23rd. I think I'm gonna re-download Guild Wars 2. It was honestly fun. It was a fun game.
I really enjoy Guild. I don't want to sound like I'm whining, but it makes you feel a little bit, you know, I bought that game and paid money for it day of release 3 years ago, and now they've made it free to play, but they still want me to pay for the expansion. I know it's not, it just kind of makes you feel a little bit like, oh.
I see what you mean, I guess, yeah. I wouldn't agree, because it's been 3 years so many games that have gone, you know. But
oh, absolutely,
I guess,
yeah.
Are the people who bought it not getting something? Like, I don't know, mount or something?
I haven't seen anything about it. I haven't sent any emails out saying what we get if we were prior supporters, so I don't know. But I won't say conclusively that, no.
How long has it been since you've played it?
I played it last in May.
Oh, okay, so you do play it a little bit. Okay, I can see it, yeah. I can see it. Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think of it because I haven't played it for, well, basically 3 years. But, I understand what you mean. I still think it's cool. It's free to play.
Oh, no, I do too. I think it's great. I mean, it's a fantastic game. It's one of the most different MMOs you can play out there. And I'm really happy that people are going to be playing it. I mean, Guild Wars, just as a franchise, is huge to me. I mean, Guild Wars 1 was the first MMO I ever played.
Ooh.
And I love that game. Yeah. And the more people that get into this universe, the happier. It's just, you know, for me personally, I kind of wish that there was a little bit more there. Yeah.
Maybe you're going to get WildStar, which is going free to play on September 29th then. Did you buy that one too?
No, I didn't.
Well, there you go. So there's, you know.
It's a silver lining.
There, yeah, exactly. I didn't play WildStar. I think I might try it too. These kinds of games I usually play for, you know, 3 hours, go through the tutorial area, and they usually don't get me into it. But it could be interesting as well. And free to play is always good. So, not always good, but you know what I mean. I want to check it out, and I don't want to pay for it. So September 29th, I'm gonna try it out. Who's seen the trailer for the BBC drama that recounts the history of Grand Theft Auto's fight with the authorities? And it's got there's a sound here. Sorry. Daniel Radcliffe and who else? Bill Paxton are going to be starring in that BBC drama. You don't seem happy, James.
As Player One.
What do you
I'm
mean
watching the trailer now. So it says like Daniel Radcliffe, it has like in lower thirds, like Player One.
No, I guess it's just Daniel Radcliffe is going to play one of the characters and Bill Paxton. I think it might be...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a drama about like historical, like the story of how the thing is going to be called The Game Changers. It's going to be the story of how Grand Theft Auto, I think, 3 came out and made a huge splash and provoked the kind of ire from the American...
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I was watching...
It's historical. It's not... Like, it's not a Grand Theft Auto movie where there's a character that is from Grand Theft Auto
Auto things. I think the headline of Grand Theft Auto TV drama, that's what I was reading. It made me think that it's going to be...
Oh, like live action Grand Theft Auto adaptation.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. No. It's a biopic kind of, but not really.
This sounds interesting. Oh. Apparently, Rockstar are going to threaten to sue.
Yeah, we mentioned it in an episode. They're not happy that the BBC.
They are
is
very
doing
unique,
this.
Actually. The two Hauser brothers are not so easy to. I mean, they're not the most friendly people on the earth, probably. So it would.
You
be,
mean
it would
from Rockstar?
Yeah. I mean, the Hauser brothers are not super open.
Oh, Daniel Radcliffe
I mean,
is playing.
Yeah, Sam Hauser. Yeah. So I'm really curious about the drama because they are very unique kind of people, the two Hauser brothers. So yeah, I think it will be interesting. I don't know. I just watched the trailer. It's very short and it's really hard to say if it will be good or bad, but still I'm really interested in it.
Mm. Interesting.
I think it's cool that we're getting, you know, our the history of our art form getting turned into BBC dramas. It's actually rewarding. I understand that Rockstar and the brothers want to have some kind of oversight over what's happening because they're talking about them. So I understand that, but I also think it's cool that we're getting this. You know, it's important enough that this is getting turned into apparently very seriously done TV drama. I'll be trying to get it for sure through various means. Who's getting Mario Maker?
I would be if I had a Wii U. I think this is one of those games that I put onto a thing that says, "This is me buying. I would like a Wii U." I'm more and more getting turned on to the fact that, and this game seems like one of the ones that is just like the Wii U is perfect for it.
Yeah, it seems like it's the console's swan song, though. So it would be kind of... But, you know, I've been an advocate for the Wii U for a long time, and I think there are at least 3 or 4 games that are wonderful on the Wii U. And if you're a gamer, I think you can put it down as a business expense, James. Of course, you might not be making a lot of money since you're starting out. But,
no, it's true.
it's definitely... But I don't know. I think I'm going to get it, but it's because I already have a Wii U. I wouldn't get the Wii U just for it. So, Umberto, Mario fan?
I'm a Mario fan. I don't know. It's this one is pretty hard because usually I don't like too much editor games because I think it's not so fun as it sounds to make games. And it's really hard to make good levels and good contents. So I'm curious. I don't know. Usually I think people have really high expectations from this kind of game, but it's a little hard to find online good contents made from people. So I don't know, I'm curious, maybe with Mario it will be different.
So what convinced me that I was probably going to get it was the fact that you get remixed versions of the 3 games that are included, designed by Nintendo. So you have at least a few levels available, so you can play those if nothing else. And hopefully you're going to get interesting stuff as well from other you know, game designers or,
I mean,
you know, other players.
I know that, but I saw that Rare had done some the other day. Oh, sorry, then you've like Playtonic. They did some levels. And I think it's nifty that, you know, loads of... It's allowing game developers to go into this one universal tool and show, hey, these are fundamentals to game design. This is something that we all agree on, and make games like that.
And you know, there were super interesting things as well. There was one of the levels that were featured was a level where you had to be small Mario in order to complete it, but you had lots of mushrooms around, like tons and tons of mushrooms. So you had to navigate between the mushrooms in order to be able to finish the level. And you had only maybe one or two enemies in the whole game, so in the whole level. So it's this kind of weird approach to things. I've mentioned a few times that I'm not interested in having levels with, you know, millions of enemies and millions of cannons and millions of Hammer Brothers everywhere. That's not what, you know, the super difficult ones are not what is drawing me to the potential of this game. But those weird, quirky things. And, you know, it's cheap enough. It's, I think I can find it under 40 euros here. So that's cool. Quick word about Destiny. We're getting swords, people, coming out in about a week. And this is just my Destiny geeking out segment in the show. Swords! Can you imagine? We're getting swords! All right, no one else cares.
I desperately want to play Destiny. I played it on my girlfriend's PS3 and I really enjoyed it. But if I was to play Destiny, I would have to buy a whole new console, and it doesn't quite get me there yet.
Yeah.
As I soon understand. As they bring it to, if they bring it to PC, I will be playing their game. And Swords is another thing that I want in that game, and I will play it even more so now if I can.
But so, okay, are you not going to get a current generation console? You're just streaming PC stuff, right?
I need that. Well, yeah, right now I am. I need there to be more of a, like, right now for the PS4, off the top of my head, I can think of maybe 4 or 5 games that I would want to play. And I need there to be more than that for now. Mm. I can't justify it. If I had a little bit more cash, then sure.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, for sure. It's not a trivial amount. As a working professional that's over 40 years old, for me it's a lot more justifiable, I guess. But yeah, I understand. I remember that time when I was a starving student. I used to work at a games store to get stuff, and I would borrow the games from the store and return them, of course.
Yeah.
So yeah, I understand. But you know, I think at some point, I mean, unless you specialize on PC stuff, which is completely valid as well. But you know, to be a well-rounded gamer, I think it's not a
For
bad
sure.
thing to have
a
console as well. But yeah. And then you're going to have to choose which one to get, and you're going to be sorry you didn't get the other one for some of the games.
An easy decision, though, because so many people that we know have PS4s. If I was to get one, it would be a PS4.
Right. I know the snowballing that. Effect is
yeah.
All right. I wanted to say a couple of words about that new crowdfunding platform called Fig, which is basically a crowdfunding platform where you can get equity in some of the games. I didn't mention it last time, but it's an interesting concept. The first game, Outer Wilds, is out. But basically what that means is that you're crowdfunding stuff, and if they do super well, you get money back. So it's equity. You actually get equity in the game being created. And it's very limited. You have only a few games that are going to be launched through that platform. It's very regulated. A lot of people are scrutinizing the games to make sure that the companies are serious, and it's not, you know, a free-for-all like it is on Kickstarter, which, by the way, mentioned they are not going to be exploring equity crowdfunding. It's not for them. But yeah, it's just, you know, Fig, if you want to look into it, it's an interesting idea for gamers. It's a little bit more involved in the crowdfunding aspect.
Yeah, I like it. I don't think I'll use it, but I like that it's a little bit more. Yeah, it gives you a little bit more involvement in it.
Well, you don't have money for a console, James, so
That's
you're
true.
Not going to start funding.
No, it's true.
Although you could fund your console's purchasing through the rewards,
I could,
you know, the
yeah.
games you're gonna, the money you're gonna get from Outer Wilds.
You can go all in on some game and see.
It's true.
Yeah,
yeah.
Add your bets and everything. Let's leave the strictly gaming news to talk about video and movies and stuff like that very quickly. Castlevania is going to get a bootleg miniseries. I don't know if you've ever seen Power/Rangers, which is a fan-made film.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I've heard a lot about it. Now, it's supposed to be really good, right?
It's super cool. It's this guy called Adi Shankar who did that Power Rangers thing. It had a bunch of famous actors in it. There's The Punisher. There's a short movie by the with The Punisher, which is super cool and super violent as well. I'm really looking forward to see what he's going to be doing with Castlevania. I've professed my love for Castlevania many times on the show. And seeing, go check out Power/Rangers and The Punisher, Dirty Laundry. There are two short films, maybe 10 minutes each. Super cool, and you'll be excited for what he can do with Castlevania after you've seen those. So
okay. Yeah, I mean,
the last. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say that I'm more excited for a miniseries than I would be for a film, because I think you can do more with a miniseries.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be like 5 minutes episodes, and there's going to be four of them, but maybe. Yeah, Umberto?
Oh, yeah, no, I just want to say that in the last 3 weeks, we had the, like, Castlevania miniseries and Castlevania Sexy Pachinko. So now we only need some good Castlevania games, because we have everything else.
Wait, I haven't seen... We're all Googling Castlevania Sexy Pachinko.
I'm pretty sure it was, like, Castlevania Pachinko. Oh, Sexy Pachinko, I'm pretty sure about
it. Yep.
Oh, there you go. All right. That is interesting. Oh, my God.
Yep. Japan, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
Patrick.
Yeah. That, we're coming back to that again. Wow. That is... Yeah. All right. I'm going to be watching that video. And it's interesting. Borderlands is apparently getting a movie from Lionsgate. I think this is the Mad Max effect. It's...
I don't think Borderlands has the story to carry that, honestly. I mean, I know that Tales of the Borderlands is supposedly doing well, but I don't think, and I'm going to get people saying, telling me off for this, but I don't think Borderlands has a good story in general. And
wow,
B,
you like to live dangerously. You're going to get some angry people reacting to this.
The fact that Lionsgate says it's developing the Borderlands movie as a tentpole feature film sounds scary.
Yeah, if you hear tentpole feature film, you're gonna think it has to be to have a wide appeal, and Borderlands is fun because it's irreverent, and I don't know how well that's gonna translate, but I think if they have any brain in their head, they're gonna know that, you know, Fury Road was very... It is violent and it is visceral. And I think Borderlands needs to be all that and funny. And I think, you know, stories can be written in that universe. It's very rich. There's a lot of lore in the thing. And I choose to be optimistic. I'm not overly optimistic, but I think it could be fun. And we're at a time when these kinds of movies can be made properly, right? If we had discussed this 15 years ago, I would have said, no way, that's going to be good. But now I think I'm allowing myself to be hopeful. So, there's also going to be a Mega Man movie. Apparently, it's going to be animated, obviously. But that's, I don't know how they're going to make a Mega Man movie not for kids. Maybe it is going to be for kids, but
I
don't see that.
It's got to be for kids. Yeah. There's no way they're going to make super gritty. Oh, although, you know, based on... I don't know if you guys have ever heard, like, music by the Megas or anything, but they do super gritty music around Mega Man, so it's doable. But I don't see... I don't see Fox making a gritty film about Mega Man at all.
Yeah, for sure. And it's... we never know. You know, the Power Rangers thing was actually super cool, but Mega Man, it's... We never know, but I think it's going to be aimed at kids. And finally... Oh, Umberto, go ahead.
No. I just agree with James about Mega Man and also about Borderlands, but they're making a movie around Monopoly, so I think everything is possible.
Oh, there's a Monopoly game movie?
No, there is... Yeah. There is a movie about Monopoly.
That's Lionsgate as well. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it going to be a movie about the history of how Monopoly became a worldwide phenomenon?
I'm not sure. No. It's not like a documentary. It's a real movie.
Go to prison. Don't collect 20,000. Is that going to be the movie?
I think something like that.
There's an article in Variety about it saying, that it's basically going to be like Battleship movie, I guess.
Wow. Well, and Battleship was the raving success we all know, so...
Yeah.
And finally, Ubisoft is building a theme park in Malaysia. It's going to open in 2020. And there's going to be Assassin's Creed, Just Dance, The Raving Rabbids. They're saying it's going to be next-generation life-sized games. I don't know that this is... I don't like theme parks to begin with, but maybe...
I really like theme parks, but Ubisoft... I don't know. Also, Nintendo, I think, say that they want to do something with theme parks.
Universal, actually, yeah, exactly. They're partnering. I don't know. It feels like... I don't know how these games would translate into full-size, life-sized experiences that wouldn't be just like a haunted house type of thing.
A Rayman roller coaster or a Far Cry like rail shooter thing, but yeah, I can't think of anything, or like a zombie, which is a game I'm playing recently, horror game, but I can't.
Exactly. How do you turn Assassin's Creed, maybe Rayman, into a roller coaster, but then it's just a roller coaster? A Far Cry rail shooter. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have what, like screens with things you shoot at the screen? Assassin's Creed, how do you make this into an attraction? It feels like it's going to be subpar or, you know, maybe full par haunted houses or like, you know, Renaissance fair type things.
Yeah. Or what if they make it like an Ubisoft open world game with towers you have to climb to act and like make it into a whole... Like each park is each zone of the park is its own tower, like you have in Assassin's Creed. You climb up it or you do something in it, and then that makes the park. I don't know.
So yeah, I don't know. That's because you're going to climb. Obviously, you're not going to wall climb because not everyone's going to. So you're going to have to go. Like it's going to be stairs, and then you see people behaving like idiots and in costumes, and I don't know. Maybe the Malaysians are going to love this, but
yeah, and that's another thing. Like, why Malaysia?
I don't know. I would suspect that they don't have theme parks, and there's a theme park company that was thinking who could we partner with to make into a theme park. It's going to be more of a theme park than a game thing, and it's going to be So anyway, if you love Ubisoft, then maybe you're going to want to travel to Malaysia in 2020. And that's going to be it for us. There's a bunch of other things that we're not going to be discussing, like Rovio, Job Cuts, and Divinity Original Sin 2 on Kickstarter. Go check that out. It looks super fun as a game. Go check out the video. It looks crazy. Batman Arkham Knight is becoming playable on PC, so come back to that game if you've been leaving it aside until it's fixed. And that's about it. Thank you so much, guys, for being here. James?
I actually have a little question that I've been thinking about recently. What do you guys think of the fact that successful developers like Divinity Original Sin sold huge amounts of copies? What do you guys think about them then going on to use Kickstarter to fund their next game?
Marketing, I think.
There's marketing for sure, but I think it's okay in their case because they're being very clear about the fact that the next game is funded already because of the success of the first game, but they are saying we want to fund additional content for the next game. So it's basically stretch goals without the initial goal. And I think on this game, they've delivered pretty spectacularly. The people who had backed the game are very happy with their investment. And the key thing here is making it very clear what you're doing. So if you're being transparent, as we were talking with, you know, ethics earlier, if you're being transparent, I think it's okay to do pretty much anything as long as people are informed. And here they did say, the game is funded, we're fine, we just want more stuff in the game, and that costs money. So,
okay, no, all right, yep. Yeah, cool.
That
sounds good to me.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to be it for us. Thank you, as I was saying, so much to both of you for being on the show. Umberto, thanks for traveling all the way from Korea. What are you doing these days on the internet?
I'm just working and getting ready to the TGS. And I will leave for Tokyo on Sunday. So,
TGS is, yeah, in just a week.
Mm. In just a week.
You know, I remember a time when TGS was the major video game show in the world. It's long gone now. But there are
some
things.
Anymore.
Yeah, some things might be interesting.
Not too bad.
I'll be following you on Twitter to hear reports from TGS. What's your Twitter name again?
U_MOIOLI.
It will be in the show notes. Thanks so much, Umberto.
Thanks.
James, what about you?
I am going to be, well, today, working on in investigations again. That's going to be coming up daily, every day, for the foreseeable future. That's where I look at a small indie game every single day for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And then I'm off to Eurogamer Expo in 2 weeks.
Oh, that's right. People have been telling me I should go there. I just can't be bothered with the travel.
No, I mean, it's not a press event. It's a fan event, but it's super fun. I've been there. This will be my third time there, and I'm going to go with my I'm going to take my dad with me as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Show him around. Yeah, it'll be nice. I'm excited to get my hands on the Battlefront beta there.
I think like everyone else. So.
Oh yeah.
All right, thank you so much. And James, can you tell me your very complicated Twitter name again?
That is at @IYAGOVOS.
Yagovos.
Yes.
Which is James in Greek.
It is, yes.
I remember that. It will be in the show notes as well. Thank you so much for being on the show. I am Not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook, and you can find this show at frenchspin.com. I hope you had a good time. We will be back in a couple of weeks with hopefully some news from TGS. See you then. Bye, everyone.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.